fresh process of cooking Filipino food. All the time we have garlic and onions first, and we brown those together.
Chef Norma Thayer is preparing kare kare. It's a braised oxtail stew, a dish she learned to make growing up in the Philippines. Now it's on the menu at her Filipino restaurant, Manila Bay Iha Iha. She pours braising liquid from the oxtail over caramelized onions.
I put some peanut butter. Well, peanut butter I use in America, but in the Philippines, we have to make the real peanuts, you know.
For seasoning, a pinch of black pepper and some annatto, kind of like a paprika for color. Then she throws in a few hunks of oxtail, sliced fried eggplant, and finally, bok choy, which she saves for last to maintain the crunch.
In the Philippines, we don't have any fridge. We don't have any freezer. We always like cook like what we gathered from, you know, the garden. If we slaughter the pig today or something, we cook it right away. Vinegar, soy sauce, lemon, limes. That's how we preserve our food.
This food is fresh and tasty, but there aren't a lot of Filipino restaurants in or around Kansas City. Most of the opportunities to try it are at festivals and special events. But that may slowly be changing. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard. And now let's talk to Lillian Pardo, with us from the Filipino Association of Kansas City. Hi, Lillian.
Good morning.
Tell me about Filipino food. What are the staples? We just heard about oxtail.
The staples of Filipino food are well-known pancit, which is a noodle dish, and adobo, usually chicken and pork, but actually adobo is described as a way of cooking. But in the Filipino culture, it is mostly chicken and pork. They're the most available meat, cooked in vinegar, soy sauce, garlic, and you stew it until it dries, and it's delicious.
You mentioned pancit. Can you describe that dish a little for people who haven't tried it?
Pancit is our version of the noodle dish. Usually, there are two kinds of noodles that we use, the rice noodles and the wheat-based noodles. You saute it in garlic, onion, and whatever meat is available. You could also add shrimp at the end, some seafood. Usually the way we do it in large quantity during like the recent ethnic festival or our own Fiesta Filipina, which is also a very popular dish, is to soak the noodles so that it's soft, and then you put chicken broth or any kind of broth that will make it tastier, salt and pepper, and a special condiment called patis, or what you call rotten fish sauce. The other Asian countries have their own version of that fish sauce.
Tell me what makes the fish sauce of the Philippines unique.
Well, I don't know if it's unique, but it's similar. Once I have viewed the variety in Asian stores, it's fermented fish, and it's strained until it's clear, and it's very similar to a lot of the other Asian fish sauce.
What are some of the other like prominent flavors or spices?
Interestingly enough, Filipino cuisine is a mixture of salt, sour, and sweet, so that there's not one dominating spice. It's fairly simple. For the kare kare that Norma Thayer described, which is also one of my favorite comfort food, is this annatto, or seeds that are... It's available now in powder, so it makes it easier. It gives it a vibrant color like turmeric or paprika, but it's a different taste altogether. I don't know if it has a real taste, but it provides very, very bright orange color to the dish, the oxtail dish.
Do you think that seeing that color affects how you taste it? I mean, is that part of the whole experience of eating this food for you?
I really believe that presentation in food is half of the battle. So it's important to have, I mean, we don't like, you know, dark colored dishes, for example, although we have our own version of the blood stew, but that's different. That's a very special concoction unique to the Philippines. I know in other cultures, you know, blood sausage, for example, is a gourmet thing. And even my own kids wouldn't, you know, ask questions about what this blood stew dishes. We call dinuguan. It's called dinuguan. It's a blood stew. And other kinds
and just
of
to be
meat.
Clear, you're saying blood stew?
Yeah. The blood that is collected after you slaughter a pig, they sell it in some areas. Here, even here, Bickle Myers meat, for example, down in Kansas City, Kansas. And it's special order for sometimes, or you have to ask for it. But it's delicious. I mean, I know some people don't like it because it's this whole connotation of eek.
It's so hard to describe flavors. Like when you say, what does corn taste like? Corn tastes like corn. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? But are you able to describe the taste of blood stew?
Well, because we put in a lot of vinegar and garlic and onion, and it ends up being a concoction of some kind, very similar to the taste of adobo, because that adobo is that same mixture of ingredients, spices, pepper. But what's unique about it are the parts that you put into it, or the kind of meat that you put into it. I don't understand why oxtail seems to taste so good, you know, and people don't like the fact that it's the tail of the cow.
Talk to me about your relationship to the Philippines and food from the Philippines. You just mentioned that your own kids, that you were introducing them to these foods.
The Filipino cuisine really is a mixture of Malay, Spanish, and Chinese culture. So historically, having been under Spain for close to 400 years, a lot of our food derives from that. Even the names, leche flan, embotido, are derived from the Spanish influence in our culture. But the Chinese, which is equally as populated in the Philippines as it is, you know, probably influence our noodles and our egg roll, although ours is a little bit unique because the wrapper that we use is much thinner, and when you fry it, it's crispier, unlike the thick egg roll piece of the Chinese. So an interesting story of my kids is one time lengua or tongue. Lengua, for example, is Spanish, right, for tongue. There's a way of fixing a tongue. I mean, there are several steps to it. And they kind of slice it real thin. And I told them it was beef steak of some kind, cooked in soy sauce and onions. And my son, who subsequently became a doctor, said, "Mom, this is not beef. It has papilla." Only he would identify that particular anatomical feature of.
Wait, what is that tongue. Anatomical? I don't even know what that is.
A papilla is sort of the elevation in the tongue that you see when it's cooked. It shows it's kind of elevation in the tongue. It's called papilla, which is like an outpour, very typical anatomically of the organ called the tongue. So I couldn't fool him into making it into beef.
When did you come to the United States?
I came to the United States in 1963 doing postgraduate training in neurology at the University of Kansas Medical Center.
So, and you've been in Kansas City for all that time then?
Except for 2 years that we were required to go home after a student visa. I've been here in Kansas City, Greater Kansas City Airport, 50 years, more than 50 years now. It's been a long time. But we've been very active in the Filipino Association. We've put up festivals, and we participated in the 38 years of the ethnic festivals. So our food has long lines. Like just recently, last weekend, we had long lines because a lot of people have become used to our pork barbecue, our lumpia, our pancit.
You know, I was in that line. I ate some of the food there. That's a booth that I go to every year, but it's also the only place that I've been exposed to Filipino food. And I wonder if, you know, there are a lot of other places to get it here in town.
Unfortunately, I have seen Filipino restaurants come and go. And right now, the Iho on 95th and Bannister. And of course, the new development is this food truck. Chrissy Nokum has a food truck called KC Pinoy. And I know you have to follow up where she's, you know, parked or stationed. I don't know if she does go to the Kansas City Star sometimes on Fridays, but I have seen her around the area.
Why do you think that there aren't more places serving Filipino food in town when other, like, regional Asian cuisines are so popular?
My theory is that we have a lot of good home cooks, and therefore, when we go to each other's homes, that, you know, we sort of have that in mind in terms of the standard in which Filipino food should taste. And maybe it's not as ubiquitous, let's say, as the Chinese restaurant. Of course, the Vietnamese cooking has come around as well. The Americans who have been to the Philippines, to Vietnam, I mean, related, unfortunately, to war, are those who are most familiar with the food. And I do know for a fact that when they go to our Philippine booth during the ethnic festival, somehow, you know, we see people who traveled there or have been involved in, you know, past wars, including the Vietnam War, which was there was a big air base in the northern part of the Philippines.
And that's where you think a lot of the, like, more exposure, broad familiarity comes from?
I think so. But somehow our marketing probably is not as good, and capital, I don't know. But I think because we can order food, and like if one to order a big quantity of food, there are a lot of good home chefs here in Kansas City. Like empanada, if you order 200 empanada, you know, there's somebody who makes it. Instead of going to a restaurant, like, you know, the lady you interviewed, Norma Thayer, she may do a good barbecue dish from what I've seen from her menu.
Is there like a pretty big Filipino community in Kansas City?
I would say that within our association, we have approximately 300 to 350 paid members. But I can tell you from observation during our festivals, they all come from other places. As far as Fort Scott, you know, Blue Springs, north of the river, I would say there may be 2,000 plus families here in the greater Kansas City area.
When you first got to Kansas City, was there something like a food that you craved from home and couldn't find?
Well, we cook it ourselves.
Right. I guess I'm wondering, like, ingredients or...
That's a good point. When we first came here in 1963, the only Asian restaurant was the House of Toy in the Plaza.
I remember that place.
That was it. And there were no Filipino restaurants, and we pretty much cooked, you know, in our apartments or our rental, you know, places, etc., when we first came here. And there were no Asian markets to buy ingredients. Right now, it's all over the city as far as Johnson County and, you know, 119th Street, the 888, and downtown, the Vietnamese market. Even they built it as an Asian market so that they have Indian food, Filipino food. I mean, they have shelves specifically for. So there is now a big availability of ingredients.
Thinking about the difference between home cooks and, like, restaurant fare, I also think about special occasions just for any community, like what you serve at a birthday or what you serve at a wedding or whatever. Like, that can play a special part in the cuisine, a part that you're never going to encounter in a restaurant. Is there something like that for you?
There is a very special dish. Well, it's not a dish. It's a whole animal, a pig, called lechon. Fortunately, we have Filipinos who have devised this very slow cooking of a pig on a motorized turntable like this under live coal. So that is very special, the lechon. And then there are, you know, meat that's like a meat roll that you put, called embotido. That's also special. We have our own version of paella. We call arroz valenciana, or, you know, that's special too. You can order, you can cook that at home. You know, that's one of my favorite dishes to prepare. But I would say the lechon is the ultimate. You know, you have arrived when you have lechon in the party. We had a young man last year who celebrated his 50th birthday, and the mom, you know, prepared a lechon, you know, specially ordered.
Do you have a memory of your own that involves this special preparation of a whole pig?
You know, in Manila, fortunately, there are places where lechon is prepared like 10 in a row, you know, in a rotating spit like so. So that would be my memory of a certain place in Manila where they have that lechon.
Well, Lillian Pardo, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
There's a Taste of the Philippines event in Kansas City on October 21st at the Filipino Cultural Center. Coming up, we're going to stick with cuisine from the Asian Pacific Islands as we pivot not just to poke bowls of Hawaii, but the meal in a bowl trend more broadly. I'm Gina Kaufman, and Central Standards food critics are on the way. Stay tuned. From a restaurant in landlocked Kansas, Chef Steve Nguyen is serving what you could basically call a bowl of ocean. The poke bowl is centered around raw fish, and it's a specialty of Hawaiian cuisine. It's also part of a trend on the rise here on the mainland. We sent KCUR's Andrea Tudhope out to Bistro 913 to learn about Steve's poke bowl.
Slicing cabbage is actually not something you'd typically do when preparing a poke bowl, but Steve Nguyen has taken some poetic license with this dish, native to his home in Hawaii.
We have to put a little of the cabbage garnish. My mom didn't put this, and she'd kill me on this one, but I have to, because it's hard to get seaweed and stuff, so I have to kind of beef it up a little, right? So there shouldn't be no cabbage in the poke, but I'm going to cheat a little bit, okay?
Steve grew up eating poke bowls a lot.
That's my breakfast. That's my dinner. And when I go back home, that's all I eat.
His mom made fresh poke bowls for a living, and she still does. She runs her own restaurant in Honolulu, just a stone's throw from the ocean, lapping along Waikiki Beach.
What you have next to the sea is what you got, and that's what you use.
That, he says, is what makes for an authentic Hawaiian dish. So his Hawaiian poke bowl consists of fresh, raw ahi tuna, cold black seaweed, and sliced white onion, tossed with sesame seed oil, Hawaiian rock salts, and roasted kukui nuts, which grow on an endangered tree native to Hawaii.
It's a nut that's only grown in Hawaii. That's the only place you can get it from. It's a very old tree, and it only produces nuts. And that's the only place we get it from. And they give it the flavors, but it's also a laxative. So you want too much of that, then you're in trouble. No, for real.
Steve is visibly ecstatic to bring a taste of his hometown to Kansas. He clasps his hands together as he shares everything he learned from his mom. Well, almost everything.
And a dipping sauce that we make in-house. So it's for the I'm not going to tell you. It's for the vegetable. I'm not telling you my recipe.
Before he opened this small restaurant about a year and a half ago, he remembers talking on the phone with his mom.
I talked to my mother, and she said, you know, honey, I'm so busy. I said, why? She said, honey, I feed the island. That's what she told me. And I go, what do you mean feed the island? Never knew what she meant.
He decided to go work for her in Honolulu to learn some of her techniques. He spent about 9 months working by her side.
I realized what she's talking about, because there's local people drive half around the island to go to her store just to have a poke bowl.
So he came back with her recipes and ingredients. She often mails him fresh ingredients that he can't get at grocery stores in Kansas.
The poke is becoming really popular because it's catching on in the Midwest. It's high protein, healthier. More people are health conscious now, vegan, you know, things like that.
I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard. And now we're digging into all kinds of meals served in bowls, poke bowls included. Also, quinoa bowls, breakfast bowls, the whole gamut. Call 816-235-2888 with your favorite. And of course, we recognize that lots of things have been on menus that are served in bowls for years. And we want to hear about those, too. Just to give one example, bun is a cold noodle dish served in bowls at Vietnamese restaurants. 816-235-2888. The food critics are here to guide us in our search for great bowls. Charles Ferruza is with us from the Shawnee Mission Post and the Independent. Hi, Charles.
Hi, Gina.
And Jenny Vergara is here from Feast Magazine. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, how are you?
Great. How are you?
Thank you. Great.
We've got also a special guest who comes to visit us every now and then from the Kansas City Star, Jill Silva. Hello.
Hey, Gina. Thanks for having me.
You recently wrote a guide to poke bowls in Kansas City.
I did. Yeah, it was a summer adventure.
What inspired you to say, like, now is the time?
Well, if you look at trend reports, people have been predicting this for about the last year, and I just started seeing it enough in town where I thought, okay, we're landlocked, but we do have some poke, and let's talk about it. Let's introduce it to you know, to these shores, so to speak.
Tell us about a couple of your favorite poke bowls in Kansas City.
Well, one of them, and where I started, because that's the most authentic Hawaiian one, would be at Bistro 913.
The one we just heard
the
made.
One you just heard about, and I thought it was a wonderful example. It wasn't my first example. I've had some in other states, but that kind of set the tone, and I kind of got an idea of what Hawaiian was about. Loved the seaweed in that particular dish. Went on to Bob Wasabi.
On 39th Street.
On 39th Street. So here we've got, you know, a sushi emphasis, but they do have some very nice bowls. One poke bowl, it's really about the fish, that poke bowl. It's not highly seasoned. Very beautiful.
Wait, describe it a little more.
It's got rice on the bottom. So most bowls have some kind of rice or noodle on the bottom. And then from there, you put your fish. And in this case, it was cubed sashimi, ahi, tuna. And then you add various vegetables. And so those really change it up. And also a dressing of some kind. So in this particular one, they had a soy dressing. And it was lovely, but I also ordered the spicy Korean one at the same time, and our server said, make sure that you, use your chopsticks, get it all the way through, and I have to say, it was just the perfect spice for me. Delicious, and so I really enjoyed that one as well.
One more poke bowl from your list. I know your list is longer than this, but...
My list is long. Well, they're at grocery stores, they're at Japanese restaurants, but one that I really, really like that I was surprised by was at the Unbakery and Juicery on 63rd Street. And I had seen just a passing Instagram photo, and I'm like, that looks really good. So I called to make sure they had it and picked it up from the drive-thru. How convenient. And it was gorgeous. It was the most gorgeous bowl I've had yet. It was, it had mango, so it had lots of color. It had, instead of cubed tuna, it had planks, then they were seared instead of raw. And then there was just beautiful radish sprouts and peas and a lovely tamari sauce all on top of rice. And I would highly, highly recommend that one, because it's under $10. So it's healthy, beautiful, and it was very delicious.
So that's at the Unbakery and Juicery.
Yes.
So let's talk about the bigger bowl trend as we branch out from poke bowls. And we'll talk about some other poke bowls before this show is up, your recommendations included. But, what is the deal with the bowl trend more broadly?
You know, I think the bowl trend kind of comes out of this idea of more healthy eating, more mindful eating. I mean, supposedly, obviously, what you can fit in a bowl is much different than what you can fit on a plate. And
that depends on the size of the bowl, Jenny.
It does. It does depend on the size of the bowl. But typically, if you think about it, I mean, if you get a plate, you're more likely to kind of heap your plate and fill every space. In a bowl, you're limited to the amount of space. The other thing that I think is contributing to this is our desire to eat more gluten-free, carb-free kind of meals. So
like the bread or the tortilla that we might otherwise wrap the ingredients in.
Right. So when you get rid of bread and you get rid of tortillas and you get rid of all of that, what do you do with all the filling inside of there? Well, a beautiful bowl can solve that. And then finally, I think that speaks more probably to where we're at in 2017 is the Instagrammableness of a beautiful bowl that's, Jill just described that gorgeous bowl from Unbakery and Juicery. I mean, something where you eat with your eyes first. I think a bowl can absolutely deliver that.
Well, so I don't know. I guess I was thinking about this. Eating out of bowls doesn't feel like a new concept to me. What feels new to me is just that when you look at a menu, that's considered a category of item.
Absolutely.
But then I was thinking about that a few years ago, we saw the same thing with small plates. I wonder if appearance and approach, when you talk about Instagrammability, I guess I think small plates and bowls maybe share that they create a specific visual effect for the food. I mean, maybe that's part of what this is about.
Well, I mean, you know, one of the things about eating healthy is eating, you know, every color of the rainbow, eating a variety of, getting more vegetables in your diet. I mean, obviously, the plate of, that the government has put out in terms of the amount of vegetables we're eating has totally changed, and we're being asked to eat much more kind of fruits and vegetables. And I think all of that speaks to, you know, beans in a bowl in a situation where somebody has mixed it for you, and it's appealing. You know, it's not just a plate of boring steamed broccoli where you're feeling sorry for yourself because that's your lunch. You know, this is something that's,
I certainly would, yeah.
You know, colorful with a little bit of dressing that can really, you know, make you feel like you're treating yourself.
I think also portability is part of this.
Absolutely.
And obviously, if I get mine through the drive-thru, we're all on the go and it's kind of a quick thing. And just that idea that you have your entire meal all in one convenient little container, which you can take with you, or you could eat in a restaurant as well, but or even at home. But I think that's a little bit of that trend. And I think, of course, Chipotle, you know, has shown us all how to do that. And many, many restaurants in the fast casual to fast food segment are trying to make that you know, a very quick and easy option.
But we should say that there are some bowls that are healthier than others.
I mean, for sure.
KFC has a bowl right now that's fried chicken and mashed potatoes covered in cheese. That is not a healthy bowl.
No, I don't think it's all about healthy. A lot of the barbecue places also have, you know, very decadent bowls to offer.
I mean, yeah, I guess the idea that the vessel determines how healthy something is maybe as preposterous as the idea that a vessel determines how good something is or what flavor something is. I mean, is a bowl merely a vessel, or does it like really affect what you're eating more than that? I mean, when I think about this, I guess I consider that I am one of these very sound sensitive people. I mean, like the sounds of chewing or whatever, like I notice those. And the sound of forks scraping on dishes is something that I notice. But I would say that in bowls, it's a little bit toned down because I think the bowl helps people manage the process of getting food into their mouths a little bit more effectively. I don't know.
Well, I think if you look at children, they start with bowls, usually not plates. So there might be something to that, you know. It's easier to eat from.
Well, and if you're a messy eater, as I am, you know, a bowl is always preferable.
So what are some of the other kinds of bowls we're seeing around besides poke bowls?
Rice bowls.
Rice bowls are a big one, yeah.
What else? Like, I'm noticing quinoa bowls, which I'm shocked to not notice on your lists.
Yeah, you know, our list tended to go Asian this time because I think that's where a lot of us were thinking. But, I mean, there's acai bowls, there's yogurt bowls, there's breakfast bowls of all kinds.
Noodle bowls.
I mean, if you want to even go as far as pho, I mean, ramen bowl, I mean, anything right now that's in a bowl seems to have a little bit of traction. It is part of the lexicon right now.
Charles, what are some of your favorite bowls? Start us off with a recommendation.
Well, one of the weirder bowls I put on my list was the fried pineapple rice at Bowling's, because it's served in half of a fresh pineapple. So you get to eat the bowl after you finish the rice.
That's another whole category, yeah. Edible bowls. That's a throwback.
But well, Charles, describe that dish a little more.
Well, I like it.
And this is at Bowling's?
At Bowling's. And it's sort of I didn't think I would like it the first time I ordered it, because I tend to find pineapple actually more sweet than tart. But it's actually a nice, light dish, and fried rice tends to be salty anyway. It's a salty dish, but teamed with the sweet and tartness of the pineapple, it all kind of balances out in a nice, light way.
So that's the pineapple fried rice at Bowling's. Now, at the other end of maybe the culinary spectrum, Burnt Ends Barbecue Bowl?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. So they took the bowl concept and put it on top. Instead of noodles or rice, they put it on top of sweet cornbread. So we are definitely, definitely talking.
Sounds delicious.
About,
it does sound
yeah,
great.
And then you put.
And where are we? What restaurant are we dining
it's
at
called,
right now?
It's called the Burnt End, and it is at Metcalf and 119th.
Is this the PB&J restaurant?
It is, okay. Yeah. And they have several bowls that you can order. Also the Burnt End Bowl, which I think is just iconically Kansas City. So it's the cornbread and then your burnt ends and on top some fried onion straws. So
it would make that dish even better if they made the bowl out of cornbread.
There you go.
Yeah, I'd eat that.
You want the edible bowl. Yeah. You are the edible bowl guy.
Yeah. So, you know, it just goes to show that anybody can pick up bowls. And I was talking with Jeff Staney of Joe's KC last week when he was talking about his new ice house concept. And on the preliminary menu, there is a section called bowls. And immediately I thought, oh, it's an all-in-one kind of thing. But no, they're actually calling soups and salads bowls. So to your point that sometimes it's a category and sometimes it's an all-in-one kind of meal thrown into a bowl.
So that's the burnt end barbecue bowl. What about at the Waffle House?
Yes, I've been to the Waffle House and they also have breakfast bowls.
What hour of the day was it, Jill, that you were at the Waffle House?
I don't know if I could really say. It was a Sunday.
Okay. So we'll assume innocence. We'll assume it wasn't past midnight.
Totally innocent.
Okay.
Yeah. I ended up there with a friend when another restaurant we were trying to go to was not open. And she said, you haven't been to the Waffle House. That's crazy. It's a Southern tradition. And there's one right near my house. And I'd never been. So we went in. And yes, they had a bowl. And it has hash browns on the bottom. So your egg, your cheese, your hash browns. You know, you can throw some toppings on top, and that one's super cheap. I think it's $6.99. Good way to get every component of your breakfast, right?
Well, and breakfast skillets have been around for a long time, that concept right. of skillet, everything in yeah. a skillet. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the other thing too, to Gina's point earlier, is that everything in a bowl means that people who need their food kind of segmented and segregated probably aren't on this bowl trend, because it really is all the things that you would normally have maybe on your plate, even separated, kind of together. So you have to be willing to mix it up.
Jenny, what is one of your favorite bowls in town?
I like the spicy XO noodles at Columbus Park Ramen Shop. And this is not a ramen dish. It is brothless. And basically, XO sauce is kind of an upscale sauce that takes its name from the Courvoisier kind of liquor, although it doesn't have that in it. It's really more about kind of extra luxe ingredients in it. They use a lot of dried squid, and so it's very pungent. It's salty.
Spicy?
Spicy, for sure. But it's delicious. It's very craveable. And so he's basically tossed some of his ramen noodles in that, and he's got a nice Campolindo egg on it. He's got a little pork belly, I believe. He's got some vegetables. And so brothless, just in a bowl, kind of noodle bowl with a really rich, spicy sauce. I think it's delicious. It's one of his summer items he's added to the menu. So,
and this is at the Columbus Park Ramen Shop?
Correct.
You've got some other ramen shop dishes on your list.
I do. I was trying to kind of pull out something that wasn't hot because we're still here at the end of summer. So I was trying to kind of get away from the heated broth things. And at Shio Ramen, they actually have a dish. It is a warm dish, but it's the yakisoba. And it's basically similar to kind of Columbus Park Ramen Shop. It's their own version of a noodle dish without the broth, obviously. And it's made with stir-fried noodles and lardon, which gives it that rich, you know, kind of pork loveliness, and onion, cabbage, bean sprouts, a little bit of, on top is a little bit of the bonito flakes, which is kind of made with from dried fermented fish. It's slivered very thin. And when it comes to the table, those bonito flakes tend to wave. There's a motion to them that's so fun. I mean, it's just, it's a cool bowl to get. There's some motion to it, but it eats deliciously. I mean, it's like
it
I said.
Eats.
It does. When you eat it, I mean, it's got salty and kind of sweet and sour, and everything's kind of mixed together. I think there's some pickled vegetables even in there. So Shio Ramen for the yakisoba.
Well, when KCUR Central Standard returns, we will get your recommendations for great meals in a bowl on Kansas City menus at 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman, KCUR Central Standard. We'll be right back. Welcome back to KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman here with the food critics, Charles Ferruza, Jill Silva, and Jenny Vergara. You can call 816-235-2888 to tell us about your favorite Kansas City item that comes in a bowl, bowls being the new small plates, or so I believe.
The bigger small plates.
The more contained small yeah. plates. You know, we were just talking about a ramen dish over at Shio Ramen. What about, you know, this this whole conversation was inspired largely by poke bowls, and I want to get back to a couple of those. Jenny, you've got a couple of poke bowls on your list.
Yes. So the tuna poke bowl at Boru Ramen, I think, is definitely worth, you know, again, this is another place that is traditionally a ramen shop. They also do lovely, delicious buns and other things. But down toward the bottom, they have a tuna poke that is, you know, obviously more associated with Hawaii than maybe Japan, but it all kind of wish-washes, I think, across. But Boru is in Waldo, for those of you that don't know. And this particular dish is made with yellowfin tuna, a citrus soy vinaigrette, fresh and pickled vegetables, and it's just really light and refreshing, which I think is the standard of a poke bowl. And
is there rice in that one?
Yes, there's a little bit of rice at the bottom. I think most of them, Jill said this as well, I think most of them do have something, noodles or rice at the bottom, but it's just fresh and clean, and I think our love for tuna and sashimi and ceviche, all of that kind of speaks to us being able to be interested. And now that we know how to say it, it's awesome, right? We all know how to pronounce the word poke.
I don't know if we're really saying it properly, though. I did get an email from the wife of one of the top chef guys that lives in Hawaii.
Ah.
And she was
saying it was more.
Yeah. Well, it's difficult when you're doing phonetics, but she was saying poke is the way to say it. And I'm just trying to get people not to say poke.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I was wondering, is there any connection?
Baby steps.
Yeah.
Between, you know, the first thing I thought when I first saw that word was, oh, is it like a poke salad? You know, the Southern poke
salad?
Well,
oh, wow.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think, you know, pronunciation's difficult, but
I kind of dig poke.
Yeah. So I just throw that out there. There may be another syllable in there or emphasis that we're not getting.
Let's talk to Ken in Kansas City. He's called 816-235-2888. Hi, Ken.
Hey, I was just saying that in my travels, and I've traveled all over the Pacific and Indian Oceans, the developed countries are plates. You find bowls in less developed countries, less developed areas, because everything that goes in a bowl, you can eat with one hand. Hold the bowl with one hand and eat with the other hand. Like, you don't put a steak in a bowl. You would cut the steak up and then put it in a bowl on top of noodles or rice or whatever. So, and it's more of an on-the-go kind of thing. But whenever I go to the less developed countries, that's what you find, is you find bowls more than plates. And I think that's where it comes from, is because these people are coming to the United States and they're bringing their traditions with them.
Ken, is there a dish that you've tried in Kansas City that you think is really delicious or reminds you of something on your travels?
Well, earlier you had somebody talking about pancit, Filipino,
mm-hmm.
and I haven't found one in Kansas City. If you could repeat that place, that would be great. But usually, like when I've been to the Philippines, you know, you have pancit luglug, which is pancit with vegetables, and might be some chicken, a little bit of broth in it, and which is just noodles. And then and then usually it's served with like lumpia on the top of it. And you just go with that. But if you could just repeat that, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay, thanks, Ken. What we were describing the pancit just generally, and I believe our guest was describing pancit at the Ethnic Enrichment Festival, but there are a few different Filipino restaurants in town, and I would imagine they serve pancit. I'm sorry that I don't believe that a specific restaurant's pancit was being recommended.
Although I can... you might want to try the one at Manila Bay, Iha Iha, over on Bannister. That's one of our leading Filipino restaurants, and they do pancit.
Jill, do they still do the fried chicken there too?
You know, I'm not sure about the new location. The Valley Broasters still in Green Valley.
Oh, it is? Okay.
I believe does. Yeah, that's a good question. Maybe they can call in and let us know.
I love the fact that they had both.
Yeah, it was very
cuisines,
fun.
Yeah.
We have a couple of Thai-based bowl dishes on our critics' recommendations today. You have one from Tasty Thai, Charles?
It was great. I love their pad thai there. And I should say that I can't remember when this was. I don't think they have it. They had a special one night. It was pad thai with hot dogs.
Interesting.
Yeah. And which apparently is in some fashion a delicacy. In parts of Thailand, I don't know, but I was with Lou Jane Temple, and she insisted we have it. I never would have ordered it. Not that I'm a snob, but hot dogs are so high in sodium, they're hardly worth it. But But you know what? It was kind of good. Kind of weird and good and trashy in the same way. And it was in a bowl. What else did I have on my list since I don't have it in front of me?
Oh, no, that's the dish I was asking you about. So that's the, you're recommending pad thai at Tasty Thai, whether it has hot dogs or not?
See.
What makes that pad thai stand out to you among all the pad thais?
Because I thought it was incredibly fresh tasting. And you know, sometimes in a restaurant pad thai, and this may be me misinterpreting the taste, but sometimes the sauce on a pad thai tastes canned to me or bottled or jarred in some fashion. This one really tasted fresh.
Mm-hmm. Jenny, tell me about the Longboard's Thai Bowl.
This is such a throwback. When was the last time you guys were at Longboard's?
It's been a while.
I mean, he's been in town for 15 years. He started up north, the gentleman that started Longboard's.
What is it?
So Longboard's is kind of like a wrap and bowl place. It's very casual. So there's a lot of places we're recommending today that are more upscale kind of sit down restaurants. This is, and you can certainly sit down at Longboard's, but he has almost five locations now. And he's, it's kind of an Asian, Hawaiian, California kind of wrap bowl. So anything you can get in a wrap, you can pretty much put in a bowl. And I'm actually recommending the Thai bowl, which basically it's really simple. It's just kind of cellophane noodles with a little bit of, you can get chicken or beef. I get chicken. Vegetables and peanut sauce. And his peanut sauce is very, very good, very craveable. So this is kind of a cheap and cheerful if you're just needing that fix of a quick bowl. And it's not all Asian. He actually has Mexican-inspired, Italian-inspired, I mean, anything you can kind of think of. But he's been around a long time. And
I remember that...
I went to the one on Johnson Drive. I thought it was really good.
That's the newer one, isn't it?
Yes.
And I remember that it was very... economical in price, and you could get some really good things for very little money.
Well, and I think it's interesting that he griddles or grills his wraps, so they're kind of hot on the outside. I hate a cold wrap. I really, if I'm going to eat one, I want one that's kind of hot. So,
it's kind of taking the panini idea.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah,
We have a tweet from one of our listeners saying, "I love dolsat bibimbap from Korean restaurants like Choga and Soban." That's another sort of. This isn't part of the new bowl trend. It's just a style of food that a kind of dish that has been served in bowls for a long time. And in this case, I think bibimbap is usually in an iron skillet is how it's served,
or kind of a volcanic rock bowl is traditionally, because they're served hot, sizzling. And the idea is that the rice on the bottom gets really crisp and gets
a fond kind of caramelized.
To it. Yeah,
gets and a cooks fond the to egg it. On top, or
It's usually got a fried egg. I mean, there's plenty of places like Sura Eats is a Korean pop up that's doing great bibimbap. I have it on my list from Boru Ramen, in addition to the fantastic two restaurants. She recommended the two Korean restaurants.
Those being Shoga and Soban?
Absolutely. Both of those are delicious.
Let's talk to Kathy in Kansas City. Hi, Kathy.
Hello. Hi.
What can you share?
I was just about to recommend bibimbap too when I was listening to what you guys are talking about bowls. And that's always been one of my favorite bowls. You're talking about how usually bowls have all kinds of different things in it, or there's like fresh stuff or pickled stuff, and I feel like bibimbap fits in that perfectly. And especially sometimes they use like a hot stone bowl, which I feel like I don't see that often in most like European or American cuisines. Like Asian dishes usually use bowls, become part of the cuisine itself, whether to keep things hot or cold.
So it's part of, it's not just how it's served, but it's actually part of the cooking process.
Yeah, I think so. And then I grew up in Taiwan. I've always loved all kinds of Asian food. And I just remember with bibimbap, after you're done with it, with authentic ones, they usually come by with like a hot, like broth or hot water, which makes like the crunchy part of the rice on the bottom of the hot stone bowl kind of loosen it up, and then you can eat that part of it too. And so it becomes part of that experience of eating a hot stone bibimbap.
Do you have a favorite like meal in a bowl served in a Kansas City restaurant, whether it's bibimbap or something else?
In a Kansas City restaurant? I think they were asking about it earlier. I don't remember specifically which restaurant it is. But it is one in Overland Park. So I know there's like two Korean restaurants in Overland Park that are really good. I think one is called like Choga, and the other one, I'd start with an S, and I can't remember.
Soban.
But they both, and they both have really good bibimbap bowls. And so that's something I, whenever I'm craving Korean food, I would go out and get that.
Well, thanks so much, Kathy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you.
You know, Charles, you are recommending a couple of things that we haven't talked about yet. Something from Vietnam Cafe?
Yes. And forgive me, Gina, I just had a complete brain lapse. What did I recommend?
I'm not totally certain how to pronounce this, but it's, I believe, Pho Doc Viet?
Yes. Oh, my gosh, yes. It's the kind of pho bowl that has all of the steak in it, or the beef dish, the round of beef, the flank steak, the... Knowing Kansas City's tradition as a meat and potato town, there's no potatoes, but there is noodles. It's the classic meat and carbohydrate pho bowl.
That's a great place to go to if you like Vietnamese. Yeah. It really is.
What about the blue koi ginger basil chicken, Charles?
It's a rice dish. It's a rice bowl. And there's something so restorative, and the word restaurant comes from restorative, something so restorative about the combination of ginger and basil. I mean, it just, if you walk in there feeling low or sick or kind of with a cold, you will walk out cured. It's like a miracle.
Absolutely. Well, we'd be remiss to say that there aren't just absolutely fabulous grain and veg bowls in many, many of the healthier kind of restaurants around town. We've had so many of these little, you know, Unjuicery and Bakery would be an example of that. Pure Food and Drink out in Leawood. I mean, there's a whole bunch of them that have opened now that tend to have like specialty grains and kale and vegetables with a little bit of dressing. So I don't know that any of us really recommended those, but that's a whole kind of health category in and of itself here in Kansas City that certainly is represented.
Though, Jenny, you are recommending an acai bowl.
I am. I'm not quite sure how healthy acai is because it traditionally is frozen, and so the sugar content can be...
Well, we are not health experts. You are a food critic, however, so why don't you tell us how it tastes?
Well, so this one actually is from Ruby Jean's Juicery, and acai is kind of a South American berry that has been given a lot of credibility for having a lot of antioxidant kind of properties. And
I'm glad, Jenny, you actually pronounced it so beautifully, because every time I see that word, is this acai?
Well, you know, we're learning a whole bunch of new words right today, including acai, but this is more like a smoothie bowl. And so there's a whole genre of smoothie bowls. This happens to be one made with acai and at Ruby Jean's Juicery in Westport. And it's a beautiful purple color, and you can get granola and toasted coconut and dried fruits and fresh fruits and banana slices. I mean, all kinds of things in it.
And where can I get an acai bowl?
Like I said, this one's from Ruby Jean Juicery. So any smoothie in a bowl with stuff on top can be one of these breakfast bowls for sure.
So we have just a little bit of time left, and I want to take us back to where we began with the seafood-inspired bowl. Jill, you've got a couple of these on your list, like... We're seeing the poke bowl, which began this discussion, at the Bristol.
It's actually, in that case, it's not a bowl. I was looking more for my story at poke and talking about some of the bowls. So that one comes with wonton chips and is more like a salad. Poke, just like the bowl, can be many different things. And so you will also see it in salads. But I will say... you know, looking at this trend, so, you know, the Bristol has some lovely poke, and then there's poke bowls in sort of the fast casual. It's also trickling down into our supermarkets. And if you take a look at Cosentino's at 160th out in the Blue Valley area, it just opened up, you will see bowl after bowl after bowl after bowl in their prepared food section. So.
We have just one moment left, but I want to get Allie from Kansas City in on this. Allie, what's your recommendation?
Yeah, my recommendation is for the Green Goddess Bowl at Ramen Bowls in Lawrence. It's a tiny bit of a drive, but it is absolutely magic and totally worth it.
What makes it a Green Goddess Bowl?
Well, so it's actually vegan, and I'm a meat eater, and I've tried a bunch of their meat bowls, but this one's actually my favorite. It has a mushroom miso broth that's just unbelievable, and it comes with spicy local tofu and cabbage and avocado.
Yum.
And I really recommend adding some mushrooms to it. My favorite ramen in Kansas City area.
Well, thank you, Allie. And as you can hear, our time is up, but food critics, this has been fun. Jenny Vergara, Charles Ferruza, Jill Thesilva, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can listen back and get our list of the best bowls in and around Kansas City at kcur.org/Central Standard. We'll have that ready in time for the weekend. That's kcur.org/Central Standard. And if you cannot make it through the weekend without Central Standard, check out Midwesternish. It's a podcast made by our little crew, and you can find it under programs at kcur.org. We will kick off the week next week hearing from the most recent Charlotte Street curator in residence about what the art scene looked like to her. If you have a question about how we can develop and grow as an art town, call us up on Monday. Join that discussion. This show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, Jen Chen, Andrea Tudhope, and Suzanne Hogan, with help from intern Danielle Hogarty. Thanks to Ron Yerman. Our theme music is by Spoonbender Labs. I'm Gina Kaufman.